to The Divided Kingdom, the evening news program of commentary from a Christian viewpoint. This is Elizabeth Cuppett-Caverly.
And this is Lou Caverly.
When we look at all of the topics that we have to talk about, surveillance from DARPA, continuing news from ISIS, all of these things, they sort of pale when we think about our everyday lives here in the cold, cold winter of global warming. What an oxymoron. We are thinking about our lives. Lou and I remember way back in western Pennsylvania in those mountains there at the foothills of the Allegheny Mountains that I wrote about in my books, Patriots Warning 1 and 2. Every winter, my mail carrier father would get up early, put the chains on his car, and he'd start up through some of those dirt roads in the Allegheny Mountains. And he said if he could make it up past the Wolf Turn, he might be able to go on and finish his route. So late in his life, he was getting nearer to retirement, and he had a horrendous route by that point. I think he had 400 boxes, and he was just almost driven crazy one winter because it was solid ice, day after day after day after day. He got a very pained look on his face. He looked very stressed out. He didn't say much. His jovial Irish wit kind of left him. And a couple times he rescued some of his patrons. They were sliding around on the road because he was quite an expert driver on snow and ice by that time. But, you know, all during those years, the coldest it ever got, in my memory, was about zero. And we look now at Bedford, Altoona, Johnstown, Pennsylvania, that area, and soon it will be minus 13. We never thought of this. Now, Lou, how about your area where you grew up?
Well, I grew up in a little small town about 25 miles north of Boston. And I don't ever remember it going close to zero. I'm sure it might have a little. But now they're getting it socked to them big time. I don't ever remember the kind of snow they're getting this year. And I grew up there from birth until age 21.
There's a difference, isn't there, in what you recall? What were the temperatures usually the coldest then when you were growing up?
Well, my memory is that the coldest it ever got was perhaps, 10 above. No, I can't say that with absolute certitude, but I sure feel that way. And an old high school classmate who lives in Florida said that it was going to go down, I think, to 35. And for Florida, and this is southern Florida, this was frigid. They were going to, I don't even know if they have heat. I suppose they do in the house, but it certainly was a shock to them.
So we're taking a little spot check, you see, around the country, and it looks as though things are very atypical. And on this program, we would like to invite any of you who would like to call in to us. We can't at this time take call-ins live. At this time, we are still taping our programs on Tuesday and Wednesday afternoons at 4:30 Eastern Time. So if any of you are around and you would like to talk about something or ask us something, you can call. If you call at around 4:30 to 5:30 Eastern Time, and you would call this number 1-888-656-4115. Again, that is 888-656-4115. We'd love to hear from you. And again, we say to Pastor Mike in Nigeria, we haven't been able to get to a Christian bookstore to look for the things that you need. And we want to make sure that we can find some things that are really worthwhile to help you, because you've told us you don't have a way to go to a Bible college and you need some extra things, some supplementary things to go along with your work there. And we invite any others of you to write to us. We really are winter-starved for communications. You know, we go to that box, but we know that there are hundreds and hundreds of you listening, especially down there in the South around beautiful Nashville, Music City. We remember one of you who has sent us some silver. It may not be immensely expensive, but it's going to help us. And just the thoughtfulness that you once in a while have done this and you don't really want to be contacted. And, you know, we don't judge that. We do understand that, number one, your duty is to love Jesus Christ if you're a Christian. Number two, you are to take care of your family. And if you think that getting on a list might be harmful, I believe that you have a right to not want to write to us or be on any kind of a list. You have intelligence because you have shortwave radios, many of you, that cannot really be tracked. Isn't that right, Lou?
That's right. Shortwave has been around a long time. There was a time when it was the main communication between Europe and the United States.
And I know you've talked to me about that great author, William L. Shirer, who wrote the books about the Hitler era. He used shortwave, and he said sometimes it didn't even get through. Isn't that right?
Yes, as a young broadcaster who had been hired by Edward R. Murrow, he had been a writer for newspapers before that. He almost gave up because two or three nights in a row, CBS News in New York said, I guess they would communicate afterward by telephone, they said that they couldn't hear anything. The atmospherics were just such that the whole signal just was totally lost. But then, one night, it came through as clear as could be. And from that time on, he was the main CBS News correspondent, part of the time from Vienna, part of the time from Berlin, as Hitler was getting ready to begin World War II. An exciting time, but a very shocking time as well.
And I think that you've told me about, it was almost accidental how he fell into his destiny. And sometimes on this air, on this airing of this program, we've told you about how we thought God was involved in our small radio work with you. Lou, back in early elementary school, perhaps eighth grade, Lou, is that right? Ninth grade. A teacher took him aside and said, you have a speech impediment. It was mostly R's. And he said, you know, you ought to get that taken care of because you might want to do some radio work. And we've chuckled about that because what ninth grade kid has in his mind, I will be a radio announcer? Not too many, you know, and today I'm sure even fewer than when Lou was growing up. And there I was in Pennsylvania while he was in Massachusetts, and I was entering essay contests. And I rather blithely wrote this winning essay, The Voice of Democracy, not even knowing that we had a republic and that it was a disgrace to be calling it democracy. But even then, the global elite had begun the brainwashing and taking things out of the civics courses, taking a lot of knowledge of the Constitution out of the public school curriculum. So there I was, and I won a radio contest, and I got to go to the local radio station and deliver my essay. And then in college, I did a little bit of radio work. So you see, God was getting us ready. But then we moved the thing up to where I'm in West Virginia University, and I'm working with student teachers. And the reading department head where I'm taking my courses said, you know, you ought to just let that assistantship go and come under our department since this is your college major, your graduate major. So I did. And all of a sudden, at the end of that summer, oh, I'm so sorry, we don't have any assistantship after all. So I had to look for a job. And I quickly went to the World Book Encyclopedia, which my father was still selling, and I looked up the biggest counties in Maryland, found them, Prince George's and Montgomery. And so I finagled quickly on the phone two interviews, and I came to the first one in Baltimore County up around Dundalk, and it was a pretty heavily industrialized area with a lot of steel mills, and it would have really been harmful to my allergies. And during the interview, I told this Mr. Cowan where I was from, et cetera, et cetera. And he had relatives from Western Pennsylvania. There's a landmark up there, a place called Cowan's Gap. So I suppose those were his relatives. And the person driving me to the interview let it slip that I had another interview in Prince George's County. And he said, oh, my goodness, you mean with Nell Myers at the reading clinic? Oh, you would be so much farther ahead professionally to take that job. So you see how God got me engineered to Prince George's County. Now, Lou, was sort of hoping he would get some kind of an assistantship at MIT because his father did some work there. But that never materialized, and I see today we never wanted Lou to be under that globalist mindset. He was so brilliant that he might have become twisted and warped with evolution, with all of the kinds of callous things like the GMOs. This wasn't what God intended. So how did you get to Maryland?
Well, as a college senior, I had taken some sort of a test, I think to try to get a fellowship. I think it was the, the National Science Foundation fellowship test. And I didn't get the fellowship, but they published the names to many colleges. And I got a letter, unsolicited, from the University of Maryland at the main campus in College Park saying that they had a number of assistantships. And I'd have free tuition, a small stipend to live on, and... So I said, well, you know what, I haven't applied for any jobs because I didn't think I was going to go right into the job market, so I guess I better take it. And the rest is history.
And the next thing was Lou came to look for an apartment because he had been living with a landlady, and she got very, very ill, so he had to look for a new place to live. And he was going to go to a nearby apartment building, but I think they were at lunch. So he just came over to the one where I lived, and they had an immediate opening a few doors from me. So we look back, and we see how our friendship began and how our camaraderie grew until finally God merged us as husband and wife. So we can look back and see a lot of interesting things. And we've told you before pretty much how we learned about the New World Order. And again, I want to say if anyone wants to call in and is ready to call in today, our producer can interrupt us at any moment, and we will take that call. So at any rate, we were here, and we did not know anything about the New World Order till the presidential campaign in the year 2000, when we went out to eat at a local restaurant. And a person there who is a very well-known Christian man and who has done a lot of work in Africa and done a lot of things for good for people, and I think he's very affluent, he approached us at our table, and he said, I hope you folks are going to vote the right way. And, of course, he meant for George W. Bush. And he said, here's something you might like to read. Well, we had a cordial little visit with him, and we brought this set of pages home, and it was George Washington's Visions. But it was such a dim copy that Lou said, I'll go online and get us a better copy. Well, when he went online, he began to discover some things. And it said, download quickly. And there were 50 pages about the Illuminati. So he brought it home to me, and I sat up very late reading all this till about 3 in the morning because he had to go to work the next day. And in the morning, I said, well, you know, either these people are crazy or you and I are going to have to change our view on history. And, of course, that's the latter that happened. And then the next big turning point, you know how God uses humor in our lives sometimes. It was really pretty humorous because Lou was always interested in UFOs. He used to collect books as a high school kid, I think, on this. So he brings home this UFO magazine. And again, he's busy working and he's commuting. He doesn't have time to read it. So yours truly picks it up. And here's this article by Will Thomas on chemtrails. And this was far from a lighthearted kind of spoof article. It was deadly serious. And I recognized that. What was the difference between contrails that should only last minutes in the sky and this lingering phenomenon, I guess, if we think of it as one, not plural, this phenomenon that would last for hours and hours and spread over a clear blue sky and change it. So I was very concerned about this. This was very ominous, very sinister. So again, Lou went online, and he looked for chemtrails. And what did he find? But lo and behold, there was Al Cuppett's letter to General John Jumper and the other generals. And there it was. And that was the opening. Because my maiden name was Cuppett, Lou was even more interested. He said, I think you have a relative. And he has a link with some kind of a right-wing organization called the Prophecy Club. Well, that was the springboard to our knowledge. Pretty soon we had videos from Colonel Jim Ammerman, the former head chaplain of the Army, and we learned about the imminent takeover of the United States. These things were just bombshell revelations to us. Over time, God kept enlarging more and more by us hearing Dr. Stan Monteith, Alex Jones, and finally the time came when we made a little demo for a local radio station, and our journey now was beginning to get closer to all of you as we sit here at this mic. So it is important that we bring to you everything that we think that the remnant needs. And we're talking about this weather now. We're going to go into an article, American Thinker, February 18th, 2015, bad news for warmest. Sun has entered weakest solar cycle in a century by Thomas Lisson. The conceit that human production of carbon dioxide is capable of driving the Earth's climate is running smack into the sun. CO2 accounts for a mere 0.039% of the atmosphere, while the sun accounts for 99.86% of all the mass in our entire solar system. An old soul is not taking the insult lightly. Vencore Weather reports, for the past 5 days, solar activity has been very low, and one measure of solar activity, its X-ray output, has basically flatlined in recent days. Plot below, courtesy NOAA Space Weather Prediction Center. And of course, they have that. It's beginning February 14th of 2015, if you look that up, flatlining of the sun's recent X-ray output. Not since cycle 14 peaked in February 1906 has there been a solar cycle with fewer sunspots. I think that's astounding, Lou.
Yes, I always read that there was a 13-year cycle, and it just never changed much. But it's changing, and that's very shocking. And it's, you know, over 100 years that this has been this low.
We've heard other climatologists on True News talking with Rick Wiles, and they say that this possible ice age we're going into may last 100 years or a couple hundred years, and it may be something like what occurred here in the years about 1800, maybe 1830, maybe a little earlier beginning than that. And I've said before, I thought about my great-grandfather and grandmother, William Washington Cuppet, and his wife, Anna Border. And she was the daughter of what the genius gunmaker, Johannes Border, and her brother, Daniel Border, was the true genius that Colt in his factory recognized, according to legend, that there's the greatest gunmaker of all. So there they were, and their primitive dwelling kind of fell down a few years ago. There's not too much left of it. I wish we had kept it restored. But as a child, I used to go in there when my uncle and my father were butchering, and I would eat things called cracklings. Some of you who still live in the South, you know what I'm talking about, don't you? They were crunchy. They were sort of the intestinal coverings, cleaned out, of course, but they were sort of fried, and they were crispy, crunchy. They were really delectable. So I remembered that as a child, watching a little bit of that, and that was in that dwelling. We used to refer to this thing as the wash house. There was a smokehouse somewhere else where they did the hams and so forth, and my uncle still retained that knowledge how to do that. And of course, he died in 1968, not too old, because he had heart problems and was diabetic. So at any rate, the people there that I'm talking about, my great-grandparents living there, I've thought about what it was like, especially cold, colder than normal. And did they have trouble growing their food there? It was a small farm. You know, you'd like to go back. You'd like to know a little bit more what this was like, because we may all be facing this. Now, the article continues. We are currently more than 6 years into solar cycle 24, and today the sun is virtually spotless, despite the fact that we are still in what is considered to be its solar maximum phase. Solar cycle 24 began after an unusually deep solar minimum that lasted from 2007 to 2009, which included more spotless days on the sun compared to any minimum in almost a century. So in other words, Lou, they're saying that we were in a minimum that was unusually minimal, and now we are into this cycle that should be maximum, but it's minimal. So this is really something of concern. Let's find out a little bit more from this.
It says there are several possible consequences to the solar quiet. The first is counterintuitive. By all Earth-based measures of geomagnetic and geo-effective solar activity, this cycle has been extremely quiet. However, while a weak solar cycle does suggest strong solar storms will occur less often than during stronger and more active cycles, it does not rule them out entirely. In fact, the famous Carrington event of 1859 occurred during a weak solar cycle. In addition, there is some evidence that most large events, such as strong solar flares and significant geomagnetic storms, tend to occur in the declining phase of the solar cycle. In other words, there is still a chance of significant solar activity in the months and years ahead. Our dependence on electronic devices is such that extreme solar events could have serious consequences. However, it is the likely impact on atmospheric temperatures that threatens the consensus, quote-unquote consensus, on global warming. If history is a guide, it is safe to say that weak solar activity for a prolonged period of time can have a negative impact on global temperatures in the troposphere, which is the bottommost layer of Earth's atmosphere and where we all live. There have been two notable historical periods with decades-long episodes of low solar activity. The first period is known as the Maunder Minimum, named after the solar astronomer Edward Maunder, and it lasted from around 1645 to 1715. The second one is referred to as the Dalton Minimum, named for the English meteorologist John Dalton, and it lasted from about 1790 to 1830. Both of these historical periods coincided with below-normal global temperatures in an era now referred to by many as the Little Ice Age. In addition, research studies in just the past couple of decades have found a complicated relationship between solar activity, cosmic rays, and clouds on Earth. This research suggests that in times of low solar activity, where solar winds are typically weak, more cosmic rays reach the Earth's atmosphere, which in turn has been found to lead to an increase in certain types of clouds that can act to cool the Earth. It is common sense to believe that the sun has more influence on global temperatures than a trace gas. With a 17-year quote-unquote pause and the predicted outcomes of an increase in atmospheric CO2, warmists face more and more awkward questions. If temperatures actually decline as a result of an expected decrease in solar activity, at some point the game will be up, and the billions of dollars a year squandered on climate modeling that doesn't predict what happens will have to dry up.
And, of course, it's apparent that this environmentalism, quote, environmentalism, goes back to the Club of Rome and the conspiratorial plans of those members, because they said they needed to have something to bring us into line into the New World Order. There, they needed something to bring us into line to use as a club, and it was environmentalism. And I believe we have a caller, so welcome to the Divided Kingdom. I believe it's Steve. Is it Steve?
Yes, Steve Wallace, Lifeline Ministries.
Wonderful. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, I've been a listener now for a while, since you first started, actually, quite a number of years ago. I don't always catch the show, but I do occasionally. I just wanted to say thank you to you and Lou, and for being on the station here, and for doing what you guys do, and for being there for other people when they need you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Steve. And again, we'd like to promote ministries that are true to the Lord's Word and true to the King James Version. Could you tell our listeners how they can hear your Lifeline ministry and when?
Well, I'm on Global Star Satellite every Friday evening from 8 to 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And anyone would like to tune in to gsradio.net. They could go on and they could hear the program. We don't solicit money. If anybody would like to help the ministry, they may. But we're there to preach the Word of God. And shortly, hopefully, very soon, there'll be music coming the listeners' way also. So, but again, thank you to Divided Kingdom for what you guys do. And God bless you.
The same to you, Steve. We know that you and your late wife did a lot to help people. You sent us one time, I believe it was a CD in Chinese, and we did pass that on to some friends in a Chinese restaurant. We hope that they listened to the gospel. So there's much that your work has already done. We thank you and we salute you, Steve.
Same likewise here, and thank you to Divided Kingdom, and I'll talk to you again sometime. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you. And so we again invite other listeners to call when we're doing our taping at 4:30 Eastern Time on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. So if anyone wants to call into that number, 1-888-656-4115. Again, that is 888-656-4115. Now, we're here talking about this unprecedented cold and, you know, the record-setting snows. And this seems maybe a little humble, but, you know, we have so many dangers around us. All of the aspartame that's in the 5,000 products hidden under names like natural flavoring or flavoring. We bought some organic soups, and I think we're going to definitely pitch out one of the cans that we bought. I smelled it, and I said, would you want to eat something like this? I don't think. And I did use the first can. I poured off all of the liquid, and I used the vegetables. That was my heritage from my mother who lived in the Depression. You don't waste. You don't waste. You don't waste. But after all that happened, I had a funny kind of a headache, and I thought, no, the second can I think is going to be pitched. I don't even think we'll take it back to the supermarket. Do I really want someone else to buy this? I don't think so. So we have to remember that even if something says organic, it is USDA organic. That means it has to be 95% purely organic. See, what is this other 5%? You could get a heck of a lot of aspartame in there if you have 5% of it. Lou is always fond of these natural-sounding puddings, rice pudding, tapioca pudding. And I thought I was going to have some dental surgery, and I may still have to have it, but I'm praying for a miracle. So he stocked us up on all of this pudding. So we have little by little in the cold begun to eat it. And I think I had some really bad reactions already on this. And it says in there, natural flavoring, only 2% of this, you know. 2% is enough. We heard someone on, again, on True News, and this was pretty frightening. He was talking about methyl alcohol, and he says that's the real culprit that breaks down from aspartame. And he indicted something new that I didn't know about. He said those juice boxes. You know how people are fond of giving their children these juice boxes? As tutors, we often saw these kids bringing these lunches with these juice boxes. He said that helps that wood alcohol or that methyl alcohol break down. And this is really bad. What it does, this methyl alcohol, he says it likes to go near where you have a vein, or I guess or an artery. It likes to sort of attach itself, and then you see it becomes a foreign substance that the body fights against, and then autoimmune diseases develop. That's just one of the things. We know by hearing Dr. Betty Martini that she had, I think, seen maybe 50,000 people who were ill over her lifetime of crusading against aspartame. And So there are many, many things, brain tumors, all kinds of things could arise from the use of this industrial waste, this aspartame. So this is pretty bad. And, you know, after we learned about the juice boxes, I don't know about those containers that would hold soups or hold something like, let's say, rice milk, almond milk. Would they also break down into this methyl alcohol? Lou thinks maybe they wouldn't. Maybe it's the fruit in the juices that would help to make it. So we don't know. And if anyone wants to research this a little bit more, let us know. One of our listeners fears that we are having extra iron added to everything we have, because iron overload is pretty bad. It can get into damaging all of your body organs. And we don't know. We haven't had time to really look into this. He thinks there isn't much iron in natural foods, but I think some foods do have natural iron. You think that, don't you, Lou?
Yeah, without a doubt. They always kid about spinach. I don't think that has that much iron, but many foods do. And certainly something we need to look into. It's not well known, and it would pay to do some research on that.
Because, you see, a lot of these health food stores were little. For instance, we were familiar with Walnut Acres back when Paul Keene had it. He was a wonderful man. I don't know whether he was truly Christian at the end, because he had missionary parents to India. But, you see, by being raised over there, he began to get the multicultural, the organic food. All of that was quite good. But it leads more to that acceptance of the Eastern religion and the Earth Mother and all of that kind of thing. So we're not too sure about his religious views, but he did wonderful pioneering here in this country with organic food on his Walnut Acres farms. But when he passed away, there was some mismanagement, and the whole thing kind of went under, and I think Hain bought it. So you see, these big corporations are buying up those smaller, integrity-filled health concerns and companies that we can count on. You have to be very careful. It's getting to the point where you really can hardly buy anything in a can, anything processed. But now let's move back to another humbler hazard, cold medicines. Lou?
And this is from the AARP Bulletin, January, February, 2015. Hidden hazards of cold medicines. Over-the-counter cold medications can help relieve that stuffy nose and scratchy throat, but sometimes they do more harm than good, says Leanne Mike, a pharmacist on faculty at the University of Washington School of Pharmacy. Quote, people think that because they can buy these remedies without a prescription, they're safe. But that's not always true. Unquote. Here are some of the hazards to look out for and some ways to avoid them. Acetaminophen and liver damage. If you use acetaminophen, such as Tylenol, to ease arthritis pain...
Little correction, it's acetaminophen.
I believe.
All right. You're probably right, Elizabeth. If you use acetaminophen, such as Tylenol, to ease arthritis pain, pop one of those tablets to quell a headache and add a combination cold medication for sniffles, you've gone well over the maximum safe dose, daily dose of 3,000 to 4,000 milligrams of this common pain reliever. Each year, about 78,000 people land in the emergency room for acetaminophen toxicity, which can lead to severe liver damage. Initial symptoms, including nausea, vomiting, stomach pain, and loss of appetite, are often vague and may mimic those of a cold. Later symptoms include dark urine and a pain on the upper right side of the body. If you suspect an acetaminophen overdose, seek immediate help. Stay safe. Stay away from alcohol if you've taken acetaminophen. Take the lowest dose that brings relief. Stick to the recommended timing and read labels carefully. Many medications contain acetaminophen, so you may be taking more than you realize.
Ibuprofen, ulcers, kidney problems. Ibuprofen in Advil and Motrin is a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug, NSAID, that effectively relieves body aches, headaches, and fever. it may cause a severe allergic reaction as well, especially in people allergic to aspirin, and can cause peptic ulcers and kidney damage with chronic use. Ibuprofen may also increase the risk for a heart attack or stroke, especially if you already have heart disease or high blood pressure, you smoke, you have diabetes, or you use it long term. Stay safe. Avoid alcoholic beverages if you take ibuprofen regularly. Call your doctor immediately if you develop bloody or black tarry stools, if you experience changes in the frequency of urination, or if you have problems walking or with your vision or speech. Decongestants, high blood pressure. Decongestants such as Triaminic and Dimetapp cold drops relieve nasal congestion by reducing swelling and constricting blood vessels in the nose, allowing you to breathe more easily. Unfortunately, they have a dark side. They can cause blood pressure to spike and interfere with the effectiveness of prescription medications to control blood pressure. Decongestant nasal sprays like Afrin nasal spray and Neosinephrine clear up a stuffy nose almost immediately and cause fewer side effects than those taken by mouth. But if you use sprays or drops for more than the recommended 3 days in a row maximum, the tissues lining your nose and sinuses can become dependent on them, and you'll start using more and more in an effort to breathe easily again, says Boston University pulmonologist and allergist Frederick Little. If you experience shortness of breath, irregular or slow heartbeat, or unusual nervousness, seek medical help immediately. Stay safe. If you have a heart condition, high blood pressure, diabetes, glaucoma, or an overactive thyroid, talk with your doctor before using a decongestant.
Antihistamines and falls. Short-acting antihistamines, such as Benadryl and chlorotrimetan, block the production of the compound histamine and can relieve the symptoms of a runny, itchy nose. The effects of short-acting antihistamines last for approximately 4 hours, notes Little. They also tend to make people sleepy, a side effect that can be helpful before bedtime. However, that sleepiness, quote, can be a problem for older adults who get up in the middle of the night, he says. Antihistamines can impair coordination, slow reaction time, and impact judgment, increasing the risk of falls. Longer-acting antihistamines such as Claritin, Zyrtec, and Allegra are generally taken once a day and don't usually cause sleepiness. Although they're commonly used for allergies, they can also help ease the scratchy throat and runny nose that accompany a cold. Stay safe. Talk to your doctor before using a short-acting antihistamine. If you have glaucoma, an enlarged prostate, breathing problems, high blood pressure, or heart disease. If you take a longer-acting antihistamine and develop hives or a rash or have difficulty breathing or swallowing, call your doctor immediately. Combination meds, heart problems. New Zealand researchers recently found that over-the-counter cold remedies that combined acetaminophen with the decongestant phenylephrine contact that is in contact cold and flu, non-drowsy, Theraflu, daytime, severe cold, and cough can bring on serious side effects, including an irregular heartbeat, dangerous high blood pressure, and tremors. Stay safe. Consider treating only the symptoms that bother you by using a single ingredient medication. If you opt for a combination, read the active ingredient list on the label to make sure that your other medications don't contain the same ingredients.
And then we have combination meds, heart problems. And that, yes, what Lou told you about these things with these side effects, they are kind of important, very important. But now let's move right on into the police state news, the other dangers that are projected for you and me in the futuristic sense. DARPA, developing matrix-like brain implant powered from the spine. This is February 18th, Steve Watson at PrisonPlanet.com. The secretive U.S. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, is developing a device that will plug directly into the brain and transmit images, bypassing the optical system altogether, according to reports. under the guise of developing a cortical modem to enable blind people to see, DARPA researchers say that the device may also eventually replace all virtual and augmented reality technology. Projects such as Google Glass and the Oculus Rift may be superseded by DARPA's program, which aims to create high-definition images directly within the human brain, according to researchers. Much like in the action film The Matrix, the device would be powered by a spinal implant. Plans for the project were revealed at the Biology is Technology conference in Silicon Valley last week, with Boffins unveiling short-term plans to create a small device that will deliver images to the brain without the need for wearing glasses or a helmet. Reports noted that DARPA was described on stage at the gathering as a friendly but somewhat crazy rich uncle. Lou, that reminds me of when we used to talk whether I was mistaken to worry whether God was all good, and you said that God could not be crazy. Remember?
Yes, and my argument was the universe is so perfectly timed. Everything just rotates, revolves. The laws of nature are consistent. Everything is in well-organized, and it's hard to believe that a God who was crazy could do all that and keep it going. I guess that's the main point. Keep it going smoothly and consistently.
So here we have the little gods with their big ideas. Okay. And the article says further information was provided within the pages of transhumanist magazine Humanity Plus. I really resent that title, Humanity Plus. It's enough to have humanity. It's enough to be created in the image of God, but we have plus. It's like those eugenicists who say we can only have the Aryan ideal, all other mankind is inferior. That was Hitler's idea. To, you know, have the Jews killed, have the Gypsies killed, the Nazi ideal to kill the Slavic people, to think the Poles were subhuman. This is a dreadful, dreadful precedent, and we're moving back toward it again with this transhumanism. Well, the article says, quote, the short-term goal of the project is the development of a device about the size of two stacked nickels with a cost of goods on the order of $10, which would enable a simple visual display via a direct interface to the visual cortex with the visual fidelity of something like an early LED digital clock, the publication reported. The project is being overseen by DARPA's Biological Technologies Office, which was founded a year ago with the brief of devising new technologies at the intersection of biology and physical science. The office has been focusing on transhumanist projects geared towards improving the performance of soldiers on the battlefield's performance, developing biological systems for national security purposes, and it claims the future well-being of humanity. Other dystopian-sounding projects being worked on include insect cyborgs, exoskeletons, and life-sized robot elephants, according to the H-Plus report. So far, testing on the cortical modem has been limited to animals, primarily fish. As InfoWars has previously noted, DARPA has been working on variations of this project for years, decades, in fact. And given that the Pentagon war machine is spearheading it with $70 million of funding, one must seriously question why the Department of Defense suddenly gives a D about the well-being of humanity, including blind people and everyday Americans with brain disorders such as Alzheimer's. Last year, reports emerged of DARPA developing brain chips that will implant or remove specific memories from a subject, a prospect some may deem chilling, given DARPA's previous advocacy of, quote, authentication microchips and electronic tattoos that can read a person's mind. That's pretty chilling, pretty important stuff there. At a lesser level, here's another crazy idea.
Harvard professor, government mosquito drones will extract your DNA. Privacy is dead, academic tells Davos elite. January 23, 2015, by Paul Joseph Watson, InfoWars.com. Harvard professor Margot Seltzer warned that miniature mosquito drones will one day forcibly extract your DNA on behalf of the government and insurance companies. As she told elitists at the World Economic Forum in Davos, that privacy was dead. Seltzer, a professor in computer science at Harvard, told attendees, quote, privacy as we knew it in the past is no longer feasible. How we conventionally think of privacy is dead, unquote. Seltzer went on to predict that in the near future, mosquito-sized robots would perpetually monitor individuals, as well as collecting DNA and biometric information for governments and corporations. Quote, it's not whether this is going to happen. It's already happening, said Seltzer, on the issue of pervasive surveillance. We live in a surveillance state today, unquote. The professor added that miniaturized drone technology should be used for benevolent purposes, such as sending the same device into an Ebola ward to zap the germs. Fellow Harvard academic Sophia Rusch also warned that an era of genetic McCarthyism, those are her words, genetic McCarthyism, was on the way as a result of people's personal genetic information being available to government via the Internet. However, another speaker, tech entrepreneur Anthony Goldblum, told the panel that young people no longer cared about surveillance issues and were perfectly willing to trade privacy for convenience. Quote, people often behave better when they have the sense that their actions are being watched, said Goldblum, seemingly invoking O'Brien from George Orwell's 1984. As we reported yesterday, Google CEO Eric Schmidt, who is not known for his strong advocacy of privacy, greased the skids for the introduction of an Internet brain chip when he told Davos attendees that the World Wide Web would, quote-unquote, disappear as an external concept.
If you value this kind of information that we're bringing to you, we do ask for those of you who want to write to us, and any of you who can help pay this program. We pay the cost ourselves. We don't have any backers of any kind. You could send a money order or a check made out in any amount to WWCR. We can't take it directly. A few people give us $5. Someone may give us $100. You know, whatever you are led to give to help, if you're able to do that, but don't take away from your family. So if you would like to write to us, or if you just want to write a letter of encouragement, or that you hear us, write to Lou Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, The Divided Kingdom, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Again, that's Lou Caverly, The Divided Kingdom, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. The police state is really getting out of control. Here's another example, February 18th from Cassandra Rule's Free Thought Project. Cops no-knock raid, stomp necks, destroy a nearly burned-down home to find broken pot pipe. Wichita, Kansas. A Wichita mother and local business owner has taken to YouTube to express her anger over a violent no-knock raid that occurred on Friday morning at the home she owns and rents to her son and his friends. Taylor Timoney, 22, and Michael Kostelecki, 21, were home on Friday around 10 a.m. That's when officers armed with rifles burst through the unlocked door to the home they share with another friend with a battering ram. The roommates were allegedly ordered to the ground with rifles as an officer instructed one of his accomplices that if you want them to be quiet, just do them like this, and proceeded to slam Kostelecki to the ground, using his foot to stomp on his neck and his head. The female officer who was holding Timoney at gunpoint reportedly followed suit and did the same to him. The men allege that an officer asked them how they were able to pay the rent on such an expensive home. Seemingly, the only explanation is why these men were targeted. The roommates also have a music studio set up in the home, so artists are frequently coming and going. There was reportedly no explanation given to the young men about why they had been under surveillance or why they were being raided. The officers even failed to provide a copy of the search warrant to the men at the time of the raid. A document obtained from the police by Porter reportedly states that the warrant was not presented because there was no one home when the police entered the house, which was not true, Kansas Exposed reported. Porter further explains that after trashing the home, the only thing the officers managed to find was an old broken piece of a marijuana pipe. When Timoney and Kostolecki arrived home after being detained, the house was completely trashed, and a warrant was sitting on their kitchen counter. In what looked like an almost deliberate move to cause damage, a scarf was left on top of a knocked-over space heater and had begun to burn. It is truly lucky that they were released and arrived home in time to catch it before their home and all of their belongings went up in flames. From disfiguring a toddler by throwing a flash grenade into a crib to killing a 7-year-old girl asleep on the couch with her grandmother, no-knock raids are truly a black eye on this country. Can anyone actually believe that the ends justify the means? One innocent victim is too many. Estimates show that the total number of SWAT deployments across the country has increased from a few hundred per year in the 1970s to a few thousand per year in the 80s, and in 2010, the Washington Times reported estimates being as high as 50,000 per year. Many of these are for nonviolent drug offenses. Don't just take our word for it, though. Check out this shocking and interactive map from Radley Balco to see just how many victims there truly are. And here's a quote from George Orwell, 1984. There will be no curiosity, no enjoyment of the process of life. All competing pleasures will be destroyed. But always, do not forget this, Winston, always there will be the intoxication of power, constantly increasing and constantly growing subtler. Always, at every moment, there will be the thrill of victory, the sensation of trampling on an enemy who is helpless. If you want a picture of the future, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever. That's on the domestic scene. And, you know, unless we turn back to God, unless we have repentance, we're not going to get anywhere. We really aren't. We're being besieged by ISIS, and we applaud Reverend Franklin Graham for speaking up some truth.
President Barack Obama will not acknowledge the truth of Islamic terrorism, its religious grounding in the Quran, and that it is bent on destroying the West. But instead, Obama, whose entire life was shaped by Islam, cannot accept the evil in front of him, and apparently is trying to protect Islam, said Reverend Franklin Graham, president of the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. Quote, we have to understand who we're dealing with, and you have to deal with it accordingly, said Reverend Graham in a February 17th on-the-record interview with Greta Van Susteren. And he went on to say, quote, the president is ignoring the fact that these are Islamic extremists. These are terrorists. And ISIS is a terrorist organization, and they are bent on destroying the West. They've already said they want the flag of Islam to fly over the White House, unquote. And the Reverend Graham, whose father is the world-renowned preacher, Billy Graham, continued by saying, the president, his entire life, his whole influence has been Islam. His mother was married to a Muslim. His father is a Muslim. Then she married a Muslim man from Indonesia. He, Obama, was raised in Indonesia. He went to Islamic schools. I assume she was a Muslim, so his whole life experiences have been surrounded by Islam. He only knows Islam, and he's given a pass to Islam. He's refusing to accept and understand the evil that is in front of him. Van Susteren's interview questions were prompted by the White House's decision to not state that the 21 Egyptian Coptic Christians beheaded by the Islamic State over the weekend were, in fact, Christians and were killed for their faith, as their murderer stated on the video. Columnist George Will said that Obama administration's unwillingness to honestly discuss radical Islam or even say the two words in the same sentence was, quote, beyond burlesque, it's pathological, it's clinical, their inability and unwillingness to say, unquote. Also, author and psychiatrist Charles Krauthammer said on February 16th, quote, we have an administration that is truly pathological in its inability to actually state what's going on. In the video that was released that showed the savage beheading, it was addressed to the Nations of the Cross. It, meaning ISIS pledged itself to the conquest of Rome, unquote. Krauthammer further noted that Pope Francis publicly mourned for the Egyptian cops who were killed and said they were murdered by the Islamists precisely because of their Christian faith. Yet the White House called them Egyptian citizens, not Christians. In her interview with Reverend Graham, host Greta Van Susteren asked, quote, ISIS beheading 21 Christians just because they are Christians, and still the White House was refusing to acknowledge the Egyptian victims were Christians. Reverend, I just read your Facebook page in which you say in part, I am perplexed as to why our president will not acknowledge the truth and call Islamic extremism what it is. In a statement, the White House even called the 21 Christians who were beheaded Egyptian citizens, refusing to identify them as Christians. Why do you think the White House called them citizens and not Christians? The Reverend Graham said, Greta, I have no idea. I'm just baffled by this White House. And it seems as though they want to believe a lie, that everything's okay when it's not okay, unquote. The evangelical pastor then took a moment to say to any Muslims watching the program, and specifically to any of the Islamic State jihadists who might be watching, that they do not have to follow a path of violence to get to heaven. I want them, the Islamic State, to know that what they did was evil. It was wrong. It was a sin against God, he said. And I know they did this, that is the beheading, thinking they were pleasing God. But it doesn't. It's a sin, and God loves you, and God is willing to forgive you. But you've got to be willing to confess your sin to him and ask for his forgiveness. I think it's important that the Muslim world know that God does love them, and he's made a way for them to be with him in heaven. And that's through faith in his son, Jesus Christ, said the Reverend, who also runs the international aid group Samaritan's Purse. They don't have to cut off heads, he said. They don't have to die in a holy war. It's simply by faith. And Greta, this is something that the White House doesn't understand, the religious aspect of this. Reverend Graham continued, these men are doing what they're doing, thinking they are pleasing God, because the Quran teaches this. Islam says you can have slaves. Islam says you can cut the heads off of people, that you can kill Jews and Christians and Yazidis and anybody else that doesn't believe like you do. This is a religious there is a religious aspect to this that they, that is the Obama administration, just doesn't accept, said Reverend Graham. And they refuse to this day and will not accept and don't believe it. In his Facebook post on February 17th, Reverend Graham wrote, quote, after a weekend of terrorism in Libya and Denmark, beginning today, the White House is hosting a three-day summit on countering violent extremism. I am perplexed as to why our president will not acknowledge the truth and call it Islamic extremism. Call it what it is. In a statement, the White House even called the 21 Christians who were beheaded merely Egyptian citizens, refusing to identify them as Christians.
And horrible as this is, we have to remember that the global elite are building the enemies. And the fact that some of these slaughtered men were clad in orange jumpsuits, reminiscent of Guantanamo Bay detainee garb, maybe Abu Ghraib, we have to wonder, we've heard these reports of people with a British accent. Some of this is being engineered, but at the same time, there is needed to be some outrage. If Islam truly was a religion of peace, prominent Islamic leaders all over the globe would be loudly condemning ISIS whenever another slaughter of Christians took place. And it was really savage. And the fact that they propped up the heads on the victim's back. This is barbarism. The only way we're going to come out of this is if our nation repents about those little babies. We just received a picture from an anti-abortion group of a little baby. It says, born in 2014, they convinced the mother, even after she had taken one pill for the abortion, not to have it, and this dear, sweet, precious little baby is alive. We must not stop. We must...